Good afternoon and welcome to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is, well, it's actually Thursday now, yeah, sorry. It is the 22nd of May 2025. It is program number 1376 of the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, of course, in addition to 101.1 FM radio, you can also get us at our website, rcisaintlucia.com, and we are also streaming live on Facebook. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International, and please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. For our dish of the day, we are going to be discussing the recently premiered, locally produced production. It's a film, new film out, and it is called Heartfall, and it is actually going to be released to the public on Saturday, this coming Saturday, May the 24th. And, of course, we're going to be discussing that with the director, writer, producer of the production, as well as one of the actresses in Heartfall in just a bit. But first, we want to send out some birthday greetings today to Mr. Nigel George. Happy, happy birthday to you. And we do hope that you're having a fantastic birthday celebration. And also to Miss Tara Kodra. Happy, happy birthday to you, Tara. And we do hope that you're enjoying your very special day. A look back in time on this day. We go back to the year 1570, the first atlas. In Latin, it was called Theatrum Orbis Terrarum, the theater of the world, and was published by Abraham Ortelius in Antwerp. And it had a collection of 70 maps of the world. In the year 1939, on this day, Germany's Adolf Hitler and Italy's Benito Mussolini signed the Pact of Steel, formalizing the alliance known as the Rome-Berlin Axis. 2014 on this day, the Royal Thai Armed Forces, led by General Prayut Chan-o-cha, staged a coup in Thailand and suspended the kingdom's constitution, taking control of the government. And that was the first coup in that country since the 12th coup in that country, with the first one happening back in 1932. We now head across to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Need all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got gasway and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lanes, and Slack Street in Dufort. Telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish. This has been the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to our production for this Thursday. Hope you're having a very blessed day indeed. Now, of course, the, I suppose you could say the art, the creativity that comes with producing films is quite multidisciplinary. You've got lots of different various talents coming in together to produce a film, a movie. And you've got the singing, the directing, the playwriting, the photographer, the cinematography, the behind the scenes, the makeup artistry. It's a huge production, and quite often a very costly production as well. And it is certainly pretty astounding. And whenever a small island state can, in fact, produce a film, and in fact, it is of a very, very high quality, and it is called Heartfall. And the individual behind it, writer, director, producer, I would say more than a jack of all trades, perhaps a master of many trades indeed, a super talented individual, Mr. Elijah Anatole. It is, in fact, his first feature film production, and we're so very pleased to have him in studio with us today to discuss all about Heartfall And he's, of course, also accompanied by one of the actresses starring Nola in Heartfall. And she is Miss Russell Lord. Elijah, Russell, thank you so very much for joining us here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International.
Thank you for having us. Good to be here.
Now, Elijah, you've been into quite a lot, I know. For such a young individual, you have published your own book, I know, authored your own book, great writing talent. I know you used to, of course, also had the early maturation doing journalism through the Star and lots of great experiences through that mix. You've yes. now decided to take your talents and put them to screen.
Yeah.
That is a really interesting journey. And I think I want to begin there. Why that desire to shift away from this written static word, of course, into film?
That is something. That's quite a journey I've really been on. I mean, moving, science from, early on, and then going into journalism, and moving from journalism into PR communications, and then moving from there, just trying to be creative and do my own thing. I've always been fascinated with film, so writing screenplays or plays it's not something new for me. I wrote plays for my local church and did a lot of dramatic plays in church a long, long time ago. Even as far back as I can remember myself being about 6 or 7 years old, writing, rewriting the folk tales of what do you call it again?
Kopelape
and those things, and acting it out with my cousins, and all of that. We used to just act it out and invite the community to come in my father's dance hall, just put on a show and everything for the community. So going back, I've really always been kind of, in that kind of thing. And it's always been my dream to really pursue that talent of mine to do a film. I've wrote a number of screenplays. And they're just there. But this one, Heartfall, started out as a little conversation I had with Ted Sandiford over a telephone call. And the very next day, I decided to just write it into a 10-minute short story. So it was supposed to be a short film, 10-minute long. But when you get into writing, you basically just get carried away, and it evolved and it got bigger. And I think the length of it was maybe about 20 to 30 minutes at the time before we started filming. Mm-hmm. And then I just started putting everything together. So I needed actors and stuff. I got a lot of no's when I asked various individuals. I got a lot of shutdowns. People were not interested, or persons who did have the talent, they just didn't want to do it. Could be that they've not seen my work. Could be that, they didn't have faith that I could have done what I said I was going to do.
I mean, this was the first time that you were doing such an expansive work.
No, I've done stuff. I've been doing productions. Most of my work is really out. Most of my work, it's out of St. Lucia. So I've done documentaries. I've done all the tourism videos for USVI. I've been the one doing that for them. Done stuff for CHTA, done stuff for companies in the US, hotels in the Bahamas and stuff. So I've been doing stuff over the years. It's just that persons don't know that's what I've been doing. And I've kept it quiet, because I'm a private person. I keep those things to myself. But I know the work that I'm supposed to, what I'm capable of doing. I know what I can do. And I've been doing that. So it's not new in terms of being in production. So
maybe in terms of the technical aspect, but I mean
the technical.
That transition though into creating a movie,
you films think it's stuff, pretty much it's pretty much easy. I've done short films before. None that I've really released on that scale before, but I have done that before. One of my first short films would have been with Chloe. We had done something before, but I didn't get to finish it and put it out. But yeah, we've done stuff before. So it's not something that that's new to me. I did start attempt a feature film in 2011. I started filming for that one, and it didn't finish because at the time I didn't have equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, I had the knowledge, the technical knowledge and everything. But it was the challenge was, you know, being able to direct not just the actors, but the crew that I got. So I did get like a grant from the outgoing Stephenson King administration. It was close to 18,000. But after maybe about, I'd say, 3 or 4 outings, money ran out because the audio guys were just greedy, I must say. You know, getting anything done in St. Lucia, people like money up front, and they don't care whether they get you what you want or whether you accomplish what you're doing. They just want to get paid. Mm-hmm. So the money ended up finishing, and I tried to raise funds to continue the project. It didn't go anywhere. So at that point, I said, I am not going that route anymore.
Right.
So I'm going to invest in my own equipment eventually, get my own things, do it. Because I remember when I started working at Choice, I did speak with Wayne about trying to get that movie off the ground and do it, because he had the equipment and everything. And he had basically convinced me to leave the star to come work with him. And that was one of the deals that I made with him, that we would have done the film.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen either, because we just didn't have time. And you know how it is working
and
in news,
right?
And of
course, right? With news and it's production.
Yeah,
so and it,
yeah.
Your day is gone very, very quickly.
It was difficult to get that done. But when I left, and over the years working, you know, as an entrepreneur doing my own thing, you know, you're able to find the time to be able to do what you really love, what you're passionate about. And that's one of the things I'm really passionate about, telling stories, and not just any stories for entertainment, but impactful stories. So now that I have the time, I can make the time doing a lot of the writing and that kind of thing.
So it's a really interesting intersect, the experience, the technical experience, the writing and the passion coming together, the inspiration coming together as well, and as well having the equipment,
yes,
and the time, and this is all happening. And
mastering, learning the equipment, learning the 'cause the thing with filmmaking, especially in this age, is that with the advent of AI, everything has just exponentially grown to a point where people never thought imagined before. So so you now have to marry AI with your equipment, with your editing skills and that kind of thing to make things work for you. Things that would seem impossible for somebody to do in a home studio. When you look at a Hollywood film, say something like The Matrix, you know, you're able to actually emulate this with the little equipment, the little stuff, and your little software. You could actually do something of that magnitude.
Some really amazing things happen.
A lot of things can happen now.
Yeah, in terms I have to be like trying to warn my dad sometimes. You know, some of the things he sees out there in the internet, it's not real. You're gonna have to really.
Somebody sent me a video this morning of an AI, sort of like a mini documentary, and it was complete AI.
Yeah,
and it was for a car show. So complete people are speaking. Mm-hmm. You don't see the telltale signs of the AI and the fingers and all of that. You can't tell. It's so real. Mm-hmm. And that's just because, you know, the recent upgrade of Midjourney and all those AI, Soros and all of those AI programs, it has really been, you know. But coming back to the film. So, interestingly, when we started shooting, it was supposed to be about 30 minutes long. And I saw the potential for the film to grow and to be a better story. And I saw this opportunity to expand it, to center it around what a man actually goes through. So the film really didn't start out to talk about the mental health challenges that men go through, but it became about
that. So what was
that.
The original idea that you wanted to bring?
Psychological drama that goes into the realm of what's real, what's not real.
Okay. I mean, people might not get that when they're just hearing Heartfall. I mean, they might be thinking, well, this is probably some kind of...
Romance?
Disappointment.
Oh, right.
Kind of...
well, that was not the original.
Somebody's gotten a gope well or something like that. You know, that's maybe what the name might suggest.
That wasn't the original title.
The
working title was Second Love.
All right.
The Second Love was supposed to talk about finding love for the second time.
Right.
But the way I would have gone around telling that story is to show how... people tend to jump to conclusions when they see things. And so I wanted to give them a wake-up call to make them realize, hey, everything is not what it seems.
The grass is not always greener on the other side.
Not just that, but everything is not always what it seems.
Okay.
So you see something and you jump to a conclusion, you make assumptions, it's not what you always think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I wanted to, I love films that has that have a huge twist, that you think this is what it's about, and then boom, you know, you switch things up and you make them realize, oh, that's what it really is about.
So how much far along were you when you decided to shift it and expand that scope of
well, production? It always had the twist. I kept the twist. It always had the twist. Mm-hmm. The expansion came when I moved I moved away from the point of the relationship between the lead actress and the male actor. So I moved away from that to put the central point only on the male actor. So I saw this opportunity to really address the whole male suicide that is so prominent in not just our societies, but societies all around the world,
mm-hmm.
Where men tend to struggle with their emotions. So I've not really seen a film so much so, except maybe a Will Smith in Seven Pounds and some others similar to that. I've not seen films really center along the line of what men go through to tell their story in terms of their emotional, how they handle their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to bring that in, and that's why I expanded it to include a suicide scene. I expanded it to include, you know, having that dialogue to allow a man to be able to make it okay for a man to talk about his feelings, mm-hmm. especially with another man. Admitting that he needs help, admitting those kind of things, which is not the norm of society. And I wanted to show that it is okay, and that's what you really need psychologically. Doctors will tell you this. That's exactly what a human being, not just a man, but a human being needs to basically recognize their situation, recognize their emotional state, admit that they are depressed, admit that they are going through a problem. And that's the first step in recognizing, first step in healing, basically. And
so there is some, I wasn't going to say dark element to it, but there are some hard issues. And
I tried my best not to go too much on the dark side. So yeah. I tried my best because I wanted to keep the film G-rated.
Mm-hmm.
On Caribbean cinemas, it is PG-rated,
okay.
Which is the initial rating that I had given to them.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had it revised, so it's now a G-rated film, okay. Which means it's for general audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Children, everybody could actually watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But the production side of things, I started the film with skeleton crew, just three individuals. So Jad Pierre, mm-hmm. his girlfriend, Leslie Ann Regis, and myself. Because I met Jad, and he basically told me he wanted to do a film and stuff. I told him, well, I have one coming up if he wants to get on board with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, no problem. I didn't know his capacity or anything when I met him and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just went along with it because I like working with people.
That's an interesting leap of faith there.
Yeah. I like working with people.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he didn't know, at least I would have shown him what to do and teach him as well. So pre-production, he helped out with that, you know, trying to get sponsors and that kind of thing and whatnot. Although I didn't really need it, to be honest, because I hate the begging thing. I know how it is here already because the first time I did the film, I did the begging and people were nobody was really interested in this. So I was grateful that the government did do that. And I think that's just before the creative industries really became the creative industries, before you had that department.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the creative industries should really focus equally on making films just as much as they focus on the music aspect here as well.
Right.
Because I believe that the music aspect does, you know, do a lot for St. Lucia, but it's not going to do as much as films would do for St. Lucia.
And that's a really important point. And interesting enough, I think at one point we actually did have a film commission here in St. Lucia. I don't know if you recall.
There was.
For a few years. I'm trying to think back exactly when. Maybe in like the early 2000s or thereabout.
A long time ago.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think it was sort of pegged along with the St. Lucia Tourist Board.
Oh.
And but I think the idea at that time, and it's, yeah, unfortunately, you know, it
well,
but I think the time is really ripe right now to actually look towards actually creating some structure in that regard.
To be honest, that I had several goals with the film. My first goal with the film was to create an impact in the lives of men,
mm-hmm.
right? To target men, to get men to come and see the film. and to the under wider society. The second aspect is to really inspire persons, young creatives, inspire people to let them know that, hey, this is possible. We could do these things here. We could do these films. And you don't need, I mean, take, for instance, 20 years later, mm-hmm. which is the 28 Days Later trilogy, mm-hmm. Which comes out very soon. It's a horror film, although I stopped watching horror films a long time ago. But this film was entirely shot on iPhone 15.
Wow. That's
a cinematic film.
Goes to show.
Entirely shot on iPhone 15.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the only camera they used. Okay? The film, the creator, was shot on FX3, Sony FX3, right? Camera, which is affordable that anybody could actually buy right now.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, and especially with the advent of online platforms, your Netflixes, your Hulus. Yep. I mean,
well, Netflix is difficult to get into because they have approved cameras that you have to use for the productions.
Yeah.
But Amazon and the others, pretty easy. Yeah.
Yeah. But it just goes to show that we're seeing productions coming from so many different parts of the world now that it's really astounding. And you know, and it's for English markets a lot of times, but they're coming from non-English countries. And, you know, and it's happening. We're seeing, there was a wonderful series I remember watching out of Iceland. And I was thinking, you know, Iceland is such a small place, only 23,000 people.
Yeah.
And they're producing some really interesting
Amazon stories. Actually has a program where they're encouraging international films to submit it to them, which mm-hmm. is what I've done. And I'm working with them to get a film on Amazon Prime Video. Even if I'm not getting paid for it, that's not the point. But coming back to the goals, I said this was part
helping
of the
helping on men.
Yeah.
Mental health.
Right.
Yes.
And to inspire persons and to show the powers that be, not just in government, but also the corporate, because corporates, they're going to tell you no for that, but they will tell you yes for FET and those kind of little things.
Carnival,
and whatnot.
Yes.
Carnival and those kind of things. Yeah. So they will not pump money into something like this, which is beneficial to the country. It's beneficial to everybody. Right. So I wanted to use this film to show what can happen when you basically pursue something of that magnitude, of that quality. If you look at the film, and I don't want to compare it, and I don't want anybody to compare it with films that have been done here before. I don't know what the situation might have been with what they faced and the restrictions they had. I myself had restrictions with my own film. I didn't have a crew. I didn't have anybody. Jad eventually left. But after the first shoot, I realized I wasn't getting what I needed in terms of his style of shooting, because I had left the first time we shot. I left it up to him to set up the camera, set up the shots and everything. I told him what shots I needed and he did, but it was not what I was looking for this specific film. So I ended up taking over. So the rest of the film, I shot it myself, did the cinematography, did the entire editing myself, did the sound design myself, I did the color grading myself. I basically did everything myself, okay?
Wow.
Everything that you see in the film, everything was basically done.
When did you start this? I mean, how long has it?
I shot the film in February 2023. I finished principal shooting in May 2023, but I still had a few scenes left to shoot. I was in and out of the country most of the time, so it was very difficult with my schedule. And by the time I came back, getting Kareem's schedule, and I still needed to cast, even during that time, latter part of 2023, I still needed actresses, and people were still telling me no. All right? It was very difficult.
Noel, somewhere around, you said yes, I assume. And I want to just bring in Noel a little bit, just to shift across. Number one, why did you even get interested in production and film? I mean, what's your story about that?
Well, basically, I was always interested in the arts. Like Elijah, I had a background when I was younger in taking part in church plays and things like this. And so I always had a leaning towards the artistic side, especially growing up on Nickelodeon and things like that. So I just had like the theater kid type of aspect, that type of look to it. When I heard the opportunity to assist a fellow Saint Lucian in pursuing his goals, that also had a major part to play in it.
And the experience, though, itself, having to deal with the director, and I don't know how difficult he could be, but, you know, you could open up and tell us a little bit.
Well, let me tell you about my time. I'm just kidding. He was a delight to work with because he's somebody that's serious and passionate about what he does. And I love people who don't just approach something like lackadaisically. They take their time. They're very methodical. They are very serious about what they're doing and can feel like you're part of something important, even if it's something simple, but you see the passion that they put into it, that's very admirable. And so it was a pleasure to work with someone with that same mindset.
And the journey, of course, every time you're in as being an actress, you've got to now understand the script, understand the story, fit yourself into the character that you're playing, in this instance, Nola, I believe. How does that work out for you? I mean, how do you prepare yourself to do that?
The creative process?
Yes.
Well, I just figured, basically, based on what I was asked to do in the script, what type of personality I would have, how it would be the best friend, what kind of dynamic would they have? And I tried to personalize that in a more realistic way for my personality. And that's basically it.
Yeah, and of course that dealing with the timing and the shoot and the casting, and how was that experience as well? Any interesting moments, any bloopers, anything you could share in that regard?
Well, don't do it. Okay.
Don't do it.
Well, I will say that basically this has been a roller coaster of emotions. At one point, it looked like we had a roller coaster because he had rented like a crane and it was okay. On the street, but we didn't even include that part. So it was a lot of like going back and forth, trying to schedule things, trying to make things be in line. And a lot of the efforts, they may not have been included in the ultimate project, but there was a lot of work that went into it and a lot of scheduling.
Yeah, I mean, for moving from a half hour production to a 90-minute film, and I can just only imagine, you know, you're probably shooting, what, maybe 900 minutes or more of actual shots to be able to just narrow it down to that specific time, that specific production.
Right. So they were new. All the entire cast that I had, they were completely new to filming. So they didn't know what the process would have been like. Normally, with a lot of productions, people tend to do rehearsals and stuff. I didn't go that route. I didn't want to do that. I wanted the authentic acting. I wanted the authentic reactions. I wanted everything to be natural so that
A degree of improv in the production, in the shots.
Not,
I mean, you did have a script, but then you allowed
a script, but no, variations. But not so much. I directed them as to what I needed them to do, and I just left it. I told them, listen, channel the get to know the character yourself, and create that persona yourself. Let it be authentic to you, how you imagine that character to be, and then channel that in and just do your thing. So I told them what I needed to come out of the acting, and I just left it to them to be able to put the behavior, the responses, and that kind of thing, but following the script, because I needed them to keep the story intact. So I did give them that leeway to be able to make the character, you know, something personal to them.
Now, it is all, you've done the premiere a couple of weeks back on May the 4th, and this coming Saturday. Tell us about the weekend that's coming up.
So we have limited screenings for Hardfall. It'll be Saturday and Sunday. So the film opens on Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday.
Caribbean cinemas. Yeah.
And Sunday at 3 in the afternoon, there will be two screenings on Sunday, 3 in the afternoon and 7 in the evening. Persons may ask whether there's going to be other days. That remains to be seen. But Caribbean cinemas, I did something. I'm not making any money off of the movie, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't feel comfortable making money off the movie because the cast, they gave me the time for free. I just don't feel comfortable making money off of what they did, right? Mm-hmm. Even if majority of the cost was carried by me in terms of production and everything else, I still don't feel comfortable, you know, exploiting their talent and the time that they gave and that kind of thing. So what I did is I made a deal with Caribbean Cinemas for them to run the film for me without me paying for the screens. If I had to pay for the screens, the cost would have been maybe about $35 to $40 to go watch the movie so that I can get enough money to pay them for the screens, right? Because it's costly. So I gave them the movie and I told them run it and sell the tickets and keep the money, okay? I just want St. Lucians to see the film. So what they did is that their usual price for the film, for films, would have been like, what, $26? So they cut it in half. So they met me halfway as well to make it affordable for all St. Lucians to be able to go there for $13.
Wow.
They can actually watch the film for 2 days.
Wow. Okay.
And if the demand is still there and people still want to see it, if schools want to organize for their students to go in to watch the film and to see what we can produce here, and it can inspire a new generation of creators, filmmakers and whatnot, they can arrange with the cinema as well. The cinema said that they are going to give them a package. So schools, if they want to bring their students to watch it, there's a special package for them there as well.
Oh, yeah. It looks like you guys need some medals or something very soon. No. But it's an amazing opportunity that's coming up this coming weekend. And it is Heartfall. It is St. Lucian produced, St. Lucian directed, St. Lucian screenplayed. And I know there's so much to discuss regarding it.
Right.
I just want to, yes, you wanted to come in quickly.
But I just want to say quickly that every single person who attended the premiere, they were
blown away.
They were blown away, not just by the cinematography, because everybody talks about the cinematography, but the story itself was very impactful.
Mm-hmm.
You should have seen the tears shed there. It's a real tearjerker.
Right.
So persons were really, they really felt the story and they really felt the acting and stuff. So again, it's a film that I believe that it's a must-see. It's a film that probably changes the pivot of filmmaking in St. Lucia and raises the bar. And, you know, it's
the quality of the cinematography alone. I mean, people are asking, is this in St. Lucia? Is this, phenomenal
so much
production.
So that when I released the trailer, I got calls from LA, Hollywood. From a director, a well-known director, I'm not going to mention names, and then there was a composer. There were several composers who reached out to me, but there was one who just kept bugging me, telling me he wants to do something on the film, and I eventually let him do it, but it so happened that he was supposed to compose the entire thing for me because that was the deal we had, but his wife's mom died, and they had to go to Chicago, so he was only able to do the opening score for me. So his name is credited in the film there as well, but it means that people, because of this film, it is being recognized in the U.S., right?
Wow.
And the contact that I have at Amazon is also blown away by what we were able to produce with the limited resources that we had. Let me tell you something. This film is a miracle. What we were able to achieve with this film is absolute miracle in terms of the quality you see, in terms of the shots, in terms of everything. And yes, I know I handle most of it to be able to make it work. And the fact that I had limited time with the actors, limited time to shoot on locations that didn't shut down for me. So before we go, I want to say, when people watch this film, I know they will compare this film, because of the quality, they will compare it with big budget films.
Right.
This is a zero budget film.
Mm-hmm.
Not a low budget. This is a zero budget film. And when you compare this zero budget film to a Hollywood film, just make sure you understand that we had limitations. So Hollywood would normally shut down entire blocks to shoot for hours,
mm-hmm.
27, 28 hours straight. They would shut down supermarkets to be able to shoot. You're talking about us shooting in a supermarket while a supermarket is open.
Thank you, Massey.
We were shooting at Eleanor's while they were doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to stop every now and then to accommodate the customers and everything. So that was, listen, it was a challenge to get those things done. And when you see what we were able to accomplish on this, I think St. Lucians should be able to appreciate this film.
I really do hope that they do. And I think we need to have you come back after enough people have watched it, maybe to just do another little talk about the next steps and what's next, I think.
Bristol has already invited me to the UK to do screenings.
Oh, wonderful.
So
wonderful.
That's also coming.
And of course, Russell, I hope you're heading across there as well. Yes, indeed. And we have been speaking with Elijah Anatole, writer, director, producer of his first feature film production. It is a 90-minute production called Heartfall. And it is being showed screened this weekend, Saturday at 7 o'clock, as well as Sunday, 2 screenings, 3 and 7 o'clock. And it's only $13. There's really no excuse not to take up this wonderful opportunity. The trailer alone is something that is astounding, and we do hope that as many people as possible can get a shot on just that. Russell, any parting words from you? Any words of encouragement? No? Just go out to see, right?
Come out and support.
Wonderful, indeed. Russell, Elijah, thank you so very much for coming here into the lunchroom, and I'm definitely going to be there.
Great, and thank you for having us.
Definitely, thank you so very much. And that has been our Dish of the Day.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got gasway and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Island style. We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice.
Spaces and ground. Everything you need is at the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, quality, yeah. Price, service, choice. It's all at Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
And that's all, of course, to the 1.1. It's now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours. Winds will be blowing from the east near 18 miles per hour or 30 kilometers per hour. The weather partly cloudy skies, becoming cloudy at times with a few showers. The forecast for the Les Antilles, partly cloudy to cloudy with scattered showers over the northern Windward Islands. Elsewhere, fair to occasionally cloudy with a few showers. Weather summary, the Atlantic high pressure system will generate moderate easterly winds across the eastern Caribbean region for the next few days. An upper level trough will continue to cause cloudiness and scattered showers over the northern half of the Les Antilles during the forecast period. A tropical wave located over the central tropical Atlantic is moving westward near 12 miles per hour or 19 kilometers per hour. And this was your weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Style. We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, yeah.
Spaces and ground. Everything you need is at the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, quality, yeah. Price, service, choice. It's all at Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Of course, we were just speaking with Mr. Elijah Anatole. He is the writer and producer, film director of the latest of St. Lucia's newly released films. It is called Heartfall, a 90-minute production, and it is screening. It's airing, screening, I should say, at Caribbean Cinemas this coming weekend. Three separate screenings, one on Saturday at 7 o'clock, and then as well on Sunday at 3 p.m. as well as 7 p.m. And, of course, we do hope that you can take up that opportunity. It's rated G, so it's for everyone. And we do hope that as many individuals as possible can take up that opportunity. It's just $13 at Caribbean Cinema. So it's less than the average play, average film. And we do hope that you can take up that opportunity. From all indications, at the premiere, it was certainly very, very impressive work there. And so kudos to Mr. Anatole and the entire cast and production team who went on. Of course, we had Russell Lord, actress starring as Nola in the production, and also starring Kareem Stanley and Cheyenne Cools. And also a very young individual in there as well, Miss Charlotte Williams. She's a student at the Montessori School, and she's also cast in that production. So definitely, it's all St. Lucian produced in terms of the shots, the scenes. And of course, that's the power of film too. When people go out there and they actually now see it, and then they're like, wow, this is a really beautiful place. Where is this shot, right? And then that's when you end up creating a whole other form of tourism. You can just think back to Lord of the Rings and the fantastic opportunities that has created for New Zealand. Lots of people just wanted to be able to go to see where these shots were actually, these various scenes were shot. In Lord of the Rings, and the wonderful topography and scenery coming out of that. And that has created a whole line of tourism for New Zealand up to this day. That still happens. And so it is really important. As I did mention, we did in fact have a film commission, which was created, I think, some years ago. Unfortunately, it no longer exists, and it certainly is one of the areas where I think there is a need to carve out a niche in that regard, because it is a very important aspect of culture. Capturing the moment, the culture, the history, the stories of people, and that has definitely some great value there. And hopefully we can definitely speak to Elijah again on the other wonderful opportunities that exist in terms of telling stories. Could you believe just recently, there were about two movies that came out, I think within maybe about a year or two ago, featuring Josephine Bonaparte, right? Josephine Bonaparte, I mean, of course, a figure and very well known as a result of her association with Napoleon. And this is a story from 200 years ago, 250 years ago. And we haven't really told our story of Josephine, right? Within the context of St. Lucia and, you know, potentially being born here and growing up here as a child and her experiences there. That acts, you know, there could be a whole story, Josephine, the untold childhood story of Josephine. Who knows, right? And these are some of the things that we can certainly seem to create messaging from the past, but also even more recent stories and challenges. We've seen attempts, of course, by many producers. Shantae's World was one of the interesting ones, came out not too long ago. So they have definitely lots of different angles and areas for storytelling, for inspiration that can certainly be cast into film. And so we definitely want to thank those brave souls who go out and produce these things, and quite often for no real monetary return, but certainly hopefully the returns can come in other forms later on down the road in terms of the promotion of the island, the telling of our stories, ensuring that these things can be in fact passed on into later generations. So definitely it's a wonderful opportunity to support our own, but also to show what is possible by going out and supporting Heartfall this coming weekend. Now, of course, in the news, we just wanted to spend a little bit of time on what perhaps was one of the leading stories right now, and that is that after 28 years in the service of the people of VA4 South, the Member of Parliament for VA4 South and former Prime Minister, former leader of the St. Lucia Labour Party, the currently governing party here in St. Lucia, Dr. Kenny Anthony, has decided that he is no longer going to contest that seat, and I suppose effectively is indicating a retirement from elective politics. Certainly, he has made a sterling contribution to the development of the country, coming in at a very critical juncture in the island's socioeconomic history. An island that was for many, many decades, certainly since the post-World War II era, had been driven by agriculture, in particular the rise of bananas in the Windward Islands under a colonial period, a colonial era, which caused for a certain level of economic growth and development coming out of the banana industry, what was then for a while even deemed green gold, that was finding itself beyond its zenith and on a downward path. The advent of the World Trade Organization, the challenges of that sector facing challenges, trade, preferential treatment being removed from the islands that it, of course, previously had enjoyed, and those effectively being shifted away, and meaning, therefore, that the thousands of individuals in the rural sector who had been able to effectively sort of create a middle class in the rural sector were now facing definitely difficult times. And of course, under that backdrop, we saw a major shift away from what was the main proponent of that old guard, that of Sir John Compton, coming into the politics of St. Lucia as well, as far back as the 1950s, during that same period, but casting his own political direction by 1964, breaking away from the St. Lucia Labour Party, forming the NLM, and then later on forming the UWP, and effectively leading the country for almost an unbroken period of 30 years, over 30 years. And effectively, his period coming to an end saw the rise and the period of Dr. Kenny Anthony coming in at that very difficult and critical juncture from 1997. Of course, the announcement coming just last night in at Independence Square, VA4, where, in fact, just 2 days short of the anniversary of his entry or his re-entry into elective politics on May the 23rd, 1997. Certainly, he would still be known as the prime minister who, the political leader who had the most astounding mandate ever enjoyed by any political leader and any prime minister, with winning 16 seats, 16 of the island's 17 constituencies, and of course with the largest proportional margin of victory of any prime minister as well. He certainly is also going to be known as perhaps the most academically astute of all prime ministers which we've had thus far. Coming in, of course, formerly a law lecturer at the University of the West Indies, as well serving in areas at the regional level as a legal counsel and advisor over in the Caribbean community, also assisting in the authoring of a lot of different legal drafting of different bills over the years. Coming into that position as Prime Minister, certainly had a very stellar record of achievement, of academic and professional achievement, heading in that time in 1997. Of course, he then was able to lead the country for two terms, and between 1997 and December 2006, when he then, in fact, ended up losing, and the Saint-Lucian Labour Party losing 11-6 to the return of Sir John Compton and the United Workers Party, and then later on returning to office for a third term between 2011 and 2016, and then of course being defeated then by Alan Chastney-led United Workers Party. Of course, the Saint-Lucian Labour Party was able to win again. And of course, since 2011, we've been seeing a bit of a flip-flop between the parties, back and forth. And of course, we are also expecting a general election very, very soon. Within the constitutionally due by July of next year, July 2026, and of course the fourth year anniversary of the sitting government coming up very soon. Of course, the record of Dr. Anthony in office is one which many people will be looking at in terms of his successes and the difficult decisions that had to be made by his government over the years. Sometimes never sat very well with some individuals, but we've seen that in the past. You can think back perhaps to maybe the likes of Erskine Sandiford in Barbados, who had to oversee a period of significant restructuring in the Barbadian economy. He only enjoyed one term in office, but of course the decisions, hard decisions, unfortunately, fall upon certain leaders of the country, and unpopular decisions at that. Of course, elections are won by popular mandate, popular vote, and unfortunately sometimes there are decisions that are never going to be popular amongst the electorate. And of course, that is always the challenge, right, of a politician. How do you effectively communicate the greater good? How do you effectively share a broader understanding of where the country needs to go, and sometimes the extent of sacrifice that has to be made by the country and by its citizens for the greater good? It's a very, very difficult thing to actually achieve. And quite often, leaders may have to make that decision, but may not always be able to effectively communicate that greater vision of what needs to happen. Of course, what tends to happen quite often is that we see the kicking of the decision down the road, and somebody is going to have to hold that cup at some point in time. And that is, of course, never an easy thing to do. And so, of course, in the case of Dr. Anthony, one of the things he had to deal with was that whole transition of the banana industry away from that very strong dependence on bananas, something that we've been speaking about for a very long time, even before that. And of course, even later on, another major structural adjustment, the matter of the value-added tax, which was, of course, something that governments before had said, hey, it's very much necessary. We're going to have to make this shift, but never very a popular move. And, of course, sometimes decisions have to be made in respect of shifts that and reforms that sometimes there are individuals who have great levels of influence and control, and they don't necessarily want to see those shifts and reforms occur. And we can think perhaps to the matter of telecommunications reform, and that too, at the time when it was happening, there were many out there who were vociferous in saying, well, you know, why are we dealing with this in this matter, in this manner? And, you know, it's oh no, we're going to see hundreds of workers working for the telecoms company at the time suffering. And of course, there were threats made in that period of time. But sometimes governments do have to make very difficult decisions. They have to make bold decisions in the better interest and in the long-term interest, and not necessarily within the interest of the immediate vote. Now, that's where there will always be, a tussle in terms of how decisions are going to be made. Because some will tell you, you need to have political power to be able to make the decisions that have to be made. And then, of course, some will tell you that the decisions that have to be made very well could potentially mean that you may lose political power. So you then have to be able to balance that out as leaders. And so definitely the record of Dr. Anthony, and of course what he was able to achieve over the years, is certainly something that is going to be hopefully written upon by various leaders as to how he was able to lead the country through some pretty interesting and difficult times, but at the same time was able to achieve some very notable shifts, whether it might have been in terms of education, the matter of universal secondary education, and reforms in terms of other improvements in terms of access to education, access to healthcare, still a major issue up to this day, of course. And of course, still though, when we look at the efforts that have been made in terms of trying to get a new general hospital and the Owen King EU Hospital, and then of course having to deal with the matters of St. Jude Hospital and expansion of issues with the police and the challenges that came out of the instability of the shift from agriculture to tourism, and many people losing out opportunities in some rural communities, the rise in the influence of the illegal trade of narcotics and all what that meant in what were generally very calm and peaceful communities now being faced with difficulties in terms of the state of crime. And of course, so many of these issues having to be dealt with. There was a time when I remember there was just one, really just almost one fire station for the north of the country from in Castries. And so if ever there was a response in the Groseley area, the tenders had to come up from all the way from Castries to be able to respond to a fire that may have been happening in Moshi or Grand Riviere or Rodney Bay. And we certainly have seen a definite expansion in some of these critical services, whether it's for the police, whether for the fire service. Of course, the state of the prisons is another one that is of note. Interestingly enough, just shortly after the May 23rd, 1997 victory of the St. Lucia Labour Party, there was a prison fire. And Her Majesty's jail at that time, Her Majesty's prisons, was by that point nearly 200 years old, being built back in between 1824 and 1827. And of course, again, what was seemingly not a very popular decision, because some people cast the idea of creating a new modern correctional facility as creating a hotel, as it was deemed. And of course, the creation of the Bordelais Correctional Facility to be able to house, the 550 prisoners. At that time, a facility that was built for 90 prisoners was probably handling easily 4 to 5 times that number of individuals. Very, very difficult situations, conditions that were really just, without humanity, really, or dignity for individuals at that point. And trying to create a better condition for all human beings, regardless of what they may have committed. And the decision to do that wasn't necessarily a very popular one, but it was the right decision to be made. And of course, that was one of the decisions that was taken. And ironically enough, later on the 23rd of May, 2020, we then, of course, saw another administration, even though there were attempts to try to protect that historic building, those prisons, of course, making a move to demolish them at that time. And it really, again, speaks to the challenges of governance in countries, because quite often people want to see progress, but there is, unfortunately, a desire for erasure. There's a desire to progress without a sense of self, a sense of the story, the history of where we, in fact, came from, what we were able to achieve. And even the dark side, the dark stories, are a part of our history as well. It's not a pleasant one, but sometimes we do need to be able to remember those places. The same challenge that you have, which has to be confronted if one ever has to visit Elmina Castle or these various castles along the coast of Africa through which millions of enslaved peoples were brought through, right? And they are now tourist attractions. They are now places of memory. They are now places that people have to understand the hardship of what persons end up going through. And so sometimes it's so very convenient to be able to dispense with anything that might seem to be difficult. But quite often it's part of that story. It's part of understanding that journey of achieving what we have achieved. And I think it's certainly in the case of Dr. Anthony, as he said yesterday, there would probably be some people who would be happy to see him move out of politics. And of course, there will be many who also see him leaving as an end of an era. They may see it as a rather sad moment where an individual who has served and has done a great deal of good for the country move on. And so let us hope that we can find suitable ways to ensure that individuals, even in their retirement, are remembered, and not just remembered, but are also seen as fonts of wisdom, regardless of their political position or dispensation, whatever the case may be. And so let's hope that we can get to a point in our political history, in our political story, where we can certainly respect individuals and their points of view. And their points of view hopefully can be expressed through objective criticism. And I know some people would have heard the contributions of Dr. Anthony as a backbencher. And, even sometimes within individuals within the Labour Party might be like, well, why is he saying these things? And maybe he shouldn't have said it that way. And what we certainly do need to ensure is that individuals and our political majority can get to a point where we can look at an issue objectively. That's what's very important, regardless of who is saying it, whether the person is red, green, yellow, blue, black, or white. But we can look at the message objectively and see, is there merit to what is being said? And is there are there things that can be learned from what is being said? All right? And hopefully, we can get beyond the individuals, get beyond the messengers, and to see what the message may be about and whether we can take these things as useful learnings on the way forward. Well, we're going to have to end here because we're already over time for this Thursday, and we do hope that you can join us for another program tomorrow on The Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Have a good one.